This day will go down in history. On the 29th of March, 1973, the United States ended its active involvement in the Vietnam War. The day Americans have prayed for has finally come.
This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, March 29th. Reported by John Chancellor with David Brinkley's Journal.
Good evening. We're going to devote most of the program tonight to the Vietnam story because on this historic day, the last of the prisoners and the last of the American troops left Vietnam. We also today began to learn what was really done to the prisoners, and it's not a pretty story. Our correspondent, Liz Trotta, was in Hanoi today. She, along with other reporters, was invited by the North Vietnamese to come to Hanoi for one day to cover the release of the last prisoners. And here by satellite is her report.
American prisoner releases are big events in Hanoi. And so for the last one, with American reporters present, thousands of North Vietnamese were there. They crowded around a prison called Nha Tu Zu. The prisoners themselves call it the zoo. American newsmen visiting Hanoi were guided to the prison and then through the gate. They were met by a North Vietnamese official, Mr. Phan Huang, who talked about how well the Americans had been treated in his camp. He said they were fed meat, fruits, and beer, and he said they even received medical care, such as when they would fall and hurt themselves while playing volleyball. Finally, reporters and photographers were led into the heart of the compound. There, eyes straight ahead and standing erect, were the last group of American prisoners that Hanoi was holding. At this moment, about 2 hours before their release, they were being inspected by members of the Joint Military Commission. Some stood in their prison cells. They looked pale and anxious. The North Vietnamese guards warned newsmen and the prisoners not to speak with each other, but the warning was ignored.
How much you know about the mission and what you did? So do you know about it?
I don't know. I haven't seen any papers or anything. I don't know what happened. I have no idea.
In one cell area, there was a protest. The prisoners turned their backs on the visitors, and they were angry. Later, Air Force Major William Ellender explained it. He said, "We object to having our pictures taken because this isn't the way we live." He tried to say more, but the guards stopped him. Immediately following this, the North Vietnamese said it was time to leave. And once more, the gates were closed on the prisoners. Less than an hour later, buses carrying the American airmen were on their way to Hanoi's Gia Lam Airport. It was time for the men to go home. Most of these men had been shot down over Hanoi during the heavy bombing raids last December. As their names were called, each man stepped forward towards waiting American Air Force officers. And with each handshake came a smile of relief. Finally, the last man to be turned over to the Americans stood alone waiting for the signal. He was Navy Commander Alfred Agnew of Mullen, South Carolina, and he was the center of attention. It was the North Vietnamese who deliberately chose him to be last.
And so, here today, in Hanoi, the American military involvement in the Vietnam War finally came to an end. For if anything or anyone symbolized the American agony of Vietnam, it was the prisoners. As fighting men, they were instruments of war. As prisoners, they became instruments of peace. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News, in Hanoi.
It was raining slightly as the planes arrived at Park Air Base in the Philippines. All told, they carried 67 returnees. Captain Keith Lewis came back on crutches. He was shot down on October 5th, 1972. His plane was hit by an air-to-air missile fired from a North Vietnamese MiG. First Lieutenant Paul Granger had a real surprise waiting for him, his sister, Chris. She joined him at the reception line. The last man off was Lieutenant Commander Alfred Agnew, who was shot down a little more than 3 months ago.
As the last prisoner of war, on the list released by Hanoi, I'd like to speak for all the prisoners of war and simply say we're mighty happy to be home. Thank you.
Then Admiral Noel Giler brought Commander Agnew over to see the crowd. From there, the two went to talk to the press.
I don't really have anything to say other than we're mighty glad to be home, and we appreciate all of you showing up to give us this wonderful welcome. I have no further comment at this time.
Did you ever think you might not get out?
No comment now. No comment.
Things calmed down long enough for the bus carrying the men to the hospital to get underway. Phil Brady, NBC News, at Clark Air Base in the Philippines.
The communists say they're holding one more prisoner, Army Captain Robert White of Newport, Rhode Island, and they say they'll release him early next week. With all but one of the prisoners set free, the Pentagon today lifted restrictions on what former POWs could say about conditions in the camps. Former prisoners today told stories of beatings, druggings, and torture by the North Vietnamese who tried to get them to make anti-war statements. One man said another prisoner was tortured to death. Another told of being handcuffed so tightly his hands turned black. Another was hanged until he lost consciousness. In California, Navy Captain James Stockdale talked about the purpose of such tortures. He and other former prisoners described what it was like.
A mighty good man can be reduced to irrationality in an hour of carefully applied pain. And the pain is so expertly applied that it need not and usually does not leave scars. Once he is reduced to the point of submission, then comes the old series of first admission of your guilt, then an apology for violating the camp regulations, and then usually an atonement for your sins in the form of some sort of a piece of propaganda that you would be forced to write.
I have been tortured. I have been beaten. I have been placed in solitary confinement for a total of 18 months during my captivity. I have been harassed. I have been humiliated. I have been put on public display. All of this is counter to international law. Those of you that would care to look at it, there are scars on my elbows and on my wrists. There are marks from cigarette burns. They have bent back two nails, which have grown back in. They have so immobilized my arms that I could not retract my hands in this manner, nor could I lift my arms higher than this when they were finished. For any doubting Thomas, you can come and take a look. The marks are left. My Hanoi bracelet is here. My Viva bracelet is here.
They would tie your wrists behind you as tightly as two men can tie them, one standing on your arms and the other pulling on the ropes. And then they would wind the ropes around your arms until they pulled your arms together behind, and your shoulders sometimes would pop out of socket. And then from there, they would run the rope over your shoulder and cross your feet in front of you in a sitting or prone position, around your feet, back up over your opposite shoulder and around your arms, and then by putting their knees in the smaller, in the between your shoulder back blades, force your head and shoulders down until your feet or your toes were in your mouth or under your throat. When the pain became sufficient that my will no longer functioned, then I did what I was forced to do. In torture, when they torture you enough, then you scream or you holler. I myself have screamed for all night.
The Department of Defense lists 1,333 Americans missing in the war. Some of them are newsmen, including our own NBC News correspondent, Wells Hangen. This was not such a happy day for the families of those men. We talked with the parents of Air Force Captain Bruce Duckett, who was shot down over North Vietnam in 1966. He's missing, and here is what his parents said.
There are still too many men over there that are unaccounted for, and we think that many of them over there are still alive. And we've got to hope that they're alive until we hear otherwise.
There are far too many discrepancies. They can't all be just vanish into thin air. They were never on the list of prisoners or on the list of men who would die. Far too many men in this category right now.
NBC Nightly News is brought to you by Phillips Milk of Magnesia. Mint flavored or regular, Phillips Milk of Magnesia is the kind of laxative doctors recommend most often.
Well, Susie, how's the new job?
Unreal, Mr. Simmons. My first customer, and she can't make up her mind about a laxative. There's zillions.
Why not recommend the kind I use? Phillips Milk of Magnesia. It's so gentle and yet thorough. And Milk of Magnesia is the laxative doctors recommend most often.
Doctors do?
Sure do.
Well, Mrs. Drummond, I'd recommend Phillips Milk of Magnesia because it's the kind of laxative doctors recommend most. Doctors do?
If you're not satisfied to be just an ordinary guy, make your move into a Pontiac Catalina. Catalina has all the distinction of a wide track. Price just a few dollars more than cars offering less. Yet with the full size and comfort of a Pontiac, which proves you're no ordinary guy.
In Saigon today, the last of the American troops got on airplanes and flew out of Vietnam, ending the longest military involvement in the country's history. The last man out was stopped by a North Vietnamese officer and given a gift, a bamboo wall mat with a picture of a pagoda on it. And with that, it was all over. Bob Jones reports.
The official ceremony dismantling the American War Command in South Vietnam lasted just 13 minutes. No band, no parade, not even very many Americans. The last words on the American effort in Vietnam were delivered by the outgoing commanding general, Fred Wyand.
Today we officially retire the colors of a most unique military-civilian organization. It was activated to assist an ally in a manner and to a degree never previously attempted by U.S. military forces. Its mission was to prevent an all-out attempt by an aggressor to impose its will through raw military force. That mission has been accomplished.
The Vietnamese Women's Army had flower lays for the general. He shook hands with his allies a last time and boarded the plane for his new assignment as Pacific Army Chief in Hawaii. The last American combat troop went home on both chartered commercial planes and military planes. Destination, San Francisco. The Viet Cong and North Vietnamese truce observers watched them go, and there were small smiles on their faces. 18 and a half years ago, the Viet Minh had watched the French pull out of here. Chief North Vietnamese spokesman, Colonel Bui Tin, had a bamboo scroll. He gave it to one of the last Americans as a gift. Said Tin, "Today, we are certainly very content." The jubilant last man to get on the last plane was Air Force Master Sergeant Vincent Giacobucci of New York. 12 years after the first American fighting man died in Vietnam, the last American fighting man went home from Vietnam. Bob Jones, NBC News, Tansanut Air Base.
After today, there will be only a couple of hundred uniformed Americans in Vietnam, all attached to the embassy, but there will also be 9,000 to 10,000 Americans in civilian clothes. And around Vietnam will be about 75,000 uniformed Americans, manning four aircraft carriers offshore with 200 planes, more than 200 B-52s in Thailand and on Guam, and 400 fighter bombers at seven bases in Thailand. all available to inflict what President Nixon has called rather serious consequences on North Vietnam if there are blatant violations of the truce agreement. The agreement is being violated every day in Cambodia and in South Vietnam. There have been more than 200 South Vietnamese casualties each day since the agreement was signed. The level of casualties is higher now than it was a year ago, so that while we're not fighting on the ground, the war goes on.
Seems like just yesterday you were a carefree bachelor, but there's been a change or two. Isn't it about time you reviewed your life insurance? Your State Farm agent offers free matchmaker service, a computer analysis that matches your needs with an up-to-date life insurance plan. Call him before there are any more changes.
Just like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When the makers of Taster's Choice brought out a coffee with fresh, perked flavor, I said, terrific. But what about us decaffeinated drinkers? Give us fresh, perked flavor. And you know, they heard me. New Taster's Choice, decaffeinated freeze-dried coffee. It looks, smells, and tastes like fresh perk. But it's 97% caffeine-free. Taster's Choice, thank you, and good night.
President Nixon went on television tonight to talk about the end of our involvement in the Vietnam War and the future of the economy. Here is part of what the president had to say.
One of the most terrible costs of war is inflation. The cost of living has skyrocketed during and after every war America has been engaged in. We recognized this danger 4 years ago. We've taken strong action to deal with it. As a result of our policies, we have cut the rate of inflation in half from the high point it reached in 1969 and 1970. And today, our rate of inflation in the United States is the lowest of that of any industrial nation in the world. But these positive statistics are small comfort to a family trying to make both ends meet. And they are no comfort at all to the housewife who sees meat prices soaring every time she goes to the market. The major weak spot in our fight against inflation is in the area of meat prices. I have taken action to increase imports from abroad and production at home. This will increase the supply of meat, and it will help bring prices down later this year. But what we need is action that will stop the rise in meat prices now. And that is why I have today ordered the Cost of Living Council to impose a ceiling on prices of beef, pork, and lamb. The ceiling will remain in effect as long as it is necessary to do the job. Meat prices must not go higher. And with the help of the housewife and the farmer, they can and they should go down.
Jack Perkins, NBC News, Los Angeles. The president did not say in his speech how the controls on meat will work, but government people say this is how. Effective immediately, all stores must post signs listing their ceiling prices for various cuts of beef, pork, and lamb. The ceiling price level shall be the highest prices at which those meats have been sold during the past 30 days. Henceforth, they may not be sold any higher than that. They may, of course, be sold lower, and government people say they hope the prices will come down somewhat with the boycott and with greater imports of some meats. The president did not say how long the controls will last, except to say until the job is done. For months, he has thought about but rejected controls on meat. His agriculture secretary said a man would be a fool to put controls on meat, but the president finally decided he had no other choice. His treasury secretary said tonight, perhaps it should have been done months ago, but tonight it is done.
Hang on to your seats, folks. Here comes Roy. He's up on two wheels. You're wobbling, Roy. Watch that wobble. Keep your balance. Those tires sure take a beating. Let me tell you, that's punishment. You really need a strong left arm on the wheel for this stunt. 3,000 pounds balanced on two wheels. How much longer can he go on? How about that, ladies and gentlemen?
Hi,
I'm Muni.
I'm Roy.
And I'm Al.
We're professional thrill drivers.
We get paid by Uniroyal to do crazy stunts on their steel-belted radial tires.
No, we're not crazy. If we didn't think them Uniroyals would hold up under stress, we wouldn't take their money.
Because in our line of work, we don't want to push our luck.
Now, you take the next step. If we couldn't count on Uniroyal's traction here, forget it.
And that goes double for our club.
You better believe it.
So if you're looking for a tire with strength and traction, just remember, we spell it out for you.
One afternoon, Mrs. Jones rented a machine to clean her carpet. Mrs. Howard didn't. Mrs. Howard did it the easy way with Glory Rug Cleaner. She didn't need to move heavy furniture, and because Glory now has soil resistors, her carpet will stay cleaner longer. That evening, while Mrs. Jones was returning her rented machine, Mrs. Howard was throwing a party. Clean your rug this afternoon. Entertain guests tonight. Glory, now with soil resistors.
You ate so fast. Are you sure you've had enough?
I'm sure.
We'll only have to throw it out.
Throw it out.
I'll wrap it up and you can take it home.
I need some Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer starts to work as you drink it to settle your upset stomach. For your upset stomach and headache, take Alka-Seltzer.
I feel much better.
Good.
Now that our active involvement in Vietnam is over, we are still bombing in Cambodia, but that may end soon, we can begin to calculate the costs and the lessons of the war. For example, the war caused some of the worst social disruptions in the country's history, marches, demonstrations, and riots. Remember when we used to see riots every week?
Nowhere were the protests against the war more vocal and violent than they were in the San Francisco Bay Area. The name Berkeley became synonymous with the word violence. Over now, most of the protests against the war in Vietnam ended, and the drafting of students ended. People now ask, whatever happened to all those demonstrators? Whatever happened to all that energy they had running up and down the streets protesting the war in Vietnam? It is, as the students say, very mellow here now. Street vendors have replaced rioters on Telegraph Street. Campus police can take it easy. Anti-war posters are covered up. The signs of protest are fading. In Sproul Plaza, a band plays to a small crowd, celebrating not the end of the war, but the 100th anniversary of the University of Berkeley. Bruce Kwan has been here since 1964.
Yeah, I think the university has now gone back to the period before pre-1964. There is a new generation of students on campus spending more time in the library, not being as creative as they used to be in terms of seeking education. A lot of us old students are plain tired. I don't know if a lot of the younger students are. Given a couple of years and given the climate which has existed on this campus, I think that students will realize that there may be things that are worthwhile in trying to change. But heck, a lot of us older ones are really tired. Very, very tired.
And if things at Berkeley and other campuses are quiet again, there have also been big changes in the country itself during the 12 long years we were involved in Vietnam. Which brings us to David Brinkley's journal. David?
We began hearing falsely about the light at the end of the tunnel several years ago. Now, in Vietnam, it's here. And it's one of the few events in recent American history everyone, without exception, was happy to see. That in itself is a rare virtue in our time, even if there were no other virtues. But there are others. One is that the American people are now free of a tragic and expensive distraction, freeing for other uses a lot of money, time, talent, and energy. And not a moment too soon. Because it appears this country is about to enter a period of re-examining some of the assumptions and beliefs that for a generation we have lived by. Assumptions about schools, welfare, crime, whether government serves us or we serve it, whether society shapes individuals or individuals shape society, and other not very easy questions. In academic and other circles where many of our social doctrines originate, this re-examination has already begun. Some of it'll be painful because nobody likes to give up ideas he has treasured all of his life. But a wrong idea, lovingly treasured, is still a wrong idea. In this period now to come, some of them surely will have to be changed, painfully. But if it is done right, the United States, with its money, energy, and talent, and its ability to adapt to change, the U.S. can again, as it has so often in the past, set an example for the rest of the world. John?
Finally, what the war cost. 56,241 Americans died from all causes, and 303,616 were wounded. The military cost alone has been reckoned at well over $100 billion. The cost to the Vietnamese was frightful, about 3 million military and civilian casualties. 415,000 Vietnamese civilians died. At one time or another, one out of every three people in South Vietnam became a refugee. 6 million refugees. The landscape of Vietnam was scarred by 14 billion pounds of American bombs, and some of the land will never, ever be the same. There are many, many other costs, many of them incalculable. Was it worth it? People will be arguing about that for years, but the Gallup poll says that an overwhelming majority of the American people think it was a mistake to have got involved. An even higher percentage approves the way President Nixon has handled getting us out. We got into Vietnam, it was said, to make North Vietnam leave its neighbor alone, but there are more North Vietnamese in South Vietnam now than there were when we went in. We went in because we were afraid of the Chinese, but there is more Chinese influence in the area now than when we went in. We went in to maintain democracy in South Vietnam, and we even wrote a constitution for the country. But there is not much more democracy there now than when we went in. The main thing, however, is that we are getting out. We have just about ended our active role, and for that, we may all say a prayer of thanks. Good night for NBC News.